Thank you very much, Earl. I've been working lately on becoming a better public speaker, and I often think of the word exemplary as my target. And normally what I mean by that is to offer as much content and substance in a very reasonable and understandable way in a short period of time. This evening I'm going to model the latter because before coming over here, I counted 10 people on the stage. And so I'm going to try to make a few quick points. Understanding that Leslie Baskerville has given us till 9 o'clock this evening, and there are lots of people in the room that we need to hear from besides the 10 people on up here. So I think if we adhere to Earl's chiding of us to try to adhere to some schedule, that maybe we'll be able to have a real good conversation and even lively discussion with everybody here. I have been looking at education attainment and achievement data for many years, and about a decade ago, almost a decade ago, I was given the privilege to direct the Patterson Research Institute, where I really focused in on all of the data that were available about African Americans in education. We produced three volumes of data about higher education first, and then elementary and secondary school, and then the transitions from high school to college and from high school to work. The UNCF still has those data and the volumes, and I would encourage you to get them. But what the general story that we concluded was that if we compare the African American population in the country with every other population group, what Earl Richardson said was that we are lagging behind every other group if we aggregate and compare just average performance and attainment in the United States. It starts at a very early age, and that's where I think we should begin to think about the solutions. When we look at 4- and 5-year-olds, for example, we find a very interesting story. We're not as far behind there as we are in subsequent years of education. When we look at things like memory and verbal recall and motivation, interest in education, caring about teachers, liking school, all sorts of measures, we find that African American youngsters at that age are equal to their white and Asian other group counterparts, at least. The one area that we observed the greatest difference was in vocabulary at the young age. The next time in the country that we have any indication of performance in school comes at fourth grade at a national level, and that's through the National Assessment of Educational Progress. We report those data every year in terms of scale scores and achievement levels. And there are three achievement levels. But because many children in the country have not reached the lowest achievement level, we established a fourth one, and we call it below basic. So the three achievement levels would be basic, proficient, and advanced. But we have nearly half of the African American fourth graders in the country being judged as being below basic in math, and 60% below basic in reading. Now, the target achievement level in No Child Left Behind by the year 2014 is for every fourth grader to read and perform mathematics at the level that we call proficient. Now, there is not a majority of any of the race groups in the country that are performing at the level of proficient at the moment, but far fewer African American youngsters in the country are performing at that level. The assessment is also administered at the eighth grade, and we see the same kind of results. And now the president is proposing, and the Congress is sympathetic to conducting these same assessments for 12th graders so that we get a better gauge of how high schools are performing and preparing kids for college and for work. Now, we have been looking at this more closely during the past year because Earl Richardson, who is a member of the ETS Board of Trustees, asked us to really examine this issue through historically black colleges. And so what we've been doing is generating new evidence to try to support a case to elevate the level of activity in historically black colleges, particularly in schools and colleges of education, for addressing this problem. Now, in general, what we're finding is that while historically black colleges do not graduate the majority of African Americans in the country who are being certified as teachers, they still provide an enormous share. About 36 to 38% is our estimate of the number of the proportion of people who are teachers who were trained in historically black colleges. We also find that still, 51 years after the Brown versus Board of Education decision, that the vast majority of elementary and secondary high school youngsters who are African American in the country are attending schools where they are in the majority. And the vast majority of those the teachers in those schools are trained in historically black colleges and universities. So we feel that we're able to make a strong case for a role for historically black colleges, because the schools in the country that are performing the lowest, the elementary and secondary schools, are in the neighborhoods of historically black colleges in this country. So if we're going to make a great deal of progress in closing the achievement gap by the measures that we're using through public policy, then it would seem logical to make historically black colleges a prominent part of it. So for the past 9 months, we have been on a mission to first understand the condition of teachers, of teaching. We don't call it teachers because we don't want teachers to be on the defensive. So we're calling it teaching quality, because we believe that at least in the short run, the people who are working in the schools are going to be there working for many years. And one thing that we've learned is African-American teachers remain teachers for the entire career, much more than white teachers in the country. The turnover rate is less. We think that may have something to do with opportunities outside of the field of teaching, but we don't know the reason. But teachers in African-American schools tend to be they're much longer than their white counterparts. Now, so what we're trying to do is to understand the condition of schools, elementary and secondary schools, and the relationship that the colleges and schools of teacher, that are preparing the teachers from in historically black colleges, what kind of relationships they have with the schools and elementary and secondary schools in their neighborhoods. And we're also trying to figure out what needs to be done to position historically black college schools and colleges of education to play a more prominent role in both conducting the research about the condition and providing the interventions, the solutions to the problems that we're facing in our schools. So we're focusing on improving teaching quality and student achievement by the conventional measures that we're using. Now, we have lots of evidence to show that we are missing out on opportunities to prepare the best and brightest raw talent in African American communities. The example I will use this evening, and then I'm going to go and sit down and yield the floor to somebody else, is a project that we're doing for the Goldman Sachs Foundation, where we are evaluating what the president of the Goldman Sachs Foundation, Stephanie Bell Rose, is calling her signature initiative. What she has done is funded four organizations to identify what she calls high potential youth, high potential disadvantaged underrepresented youth, to prepare them to attend highly selective colleges and universities where we are most underrepresented. She wants to start, she's starting at fifth and sixth and seventh grade. The four organizations are A Better Chance, which basically administers an assessment every fall, identifies children for boarding schools and independent schools mostly, but some public schools that are interested in diversifying enrollment, and just basically serves as a broker for those schools. Another one is Bank Street College of Education, where Bank Street is working with six Catholic schools in Bronx and Harlem. Catholic schools have a tradition of being have a lot of success with academic preparation of African American and Hispanic youngsters in the country, but they've fallen on difficult times because of the economy and have had trouble keeping up. So the project is aimed to help them to complement their curriculum by extraordinary activities outside of school. Center for Talented Youth at Johns Hopkins is the third organization, and for the past 25 years has been identifying seventh graders using the SAT and then having these students enrolled in 3 weeks of instruction in the area of their greatest strength. So if a student is strong in math, they go to 3 weeks of intensive study of mathematics. And Johns Hopkins tries to get through a year's curriculum with these youngsters in 3 weeks. So it's very intensive. And the final one is Prep for Prep, which happens to be the one I'm going to use the example for. Prep for Prep for 25 years has gone into Harlem, administered conventional IQ tests, found youngsters in the superior range with no problem, lots of people, and then prepared them through 7 weeks of summer instruction in seven different courses, and then 30 Saturdays during the school year, and then 30 Wednesdays during the school year for 2 hours. On Saturdays, the program is fall day. Now, then those children go off to the Petty School, Lawrenceville Academy, lots of independent, Andover, Exeter boarding schools and provide diversity for those schools, and those students have gone on to be through really selective colleges and universities, and Prep for Prep has an alumni board that is probably as impressive as any that you'll ever see. Now, Stephanie told them to go and try to work their magic in public schools in Westchester County, actually in the suburbs of New Jersey, New York, and Connecticut. And when they went out to those suburbs, the first thing they found was that African-American youngsters were really underrepresented in honors and advanced courses in school. And they asked the principal in those schools why that was the case, and the principals gave every indication that they hadn't even thought about it. And there was obviously no pressure being placed on them. Nobody was raising the question. One of the staff people in the program at that time was a man named James Finger. He has a daughter who happened to be the valedictorian of her high school in Westchester. And he asked her, how many African-American youngsters are in your advanced placement courses? Her response was, one. And he said, no, I don't mean just one course. How many are in any of them? And she said, one, and it's the same kid. This is a school that had over 10% African-American enrollment. Now, we find this throughout the country. Now, Prep for Prep went out and administered the WISC, the Wechsler Scale, Intelligence Scale for Children. It's a conventional IQ test, and had no problem generating a large number of African-American and Hispanic kids who were performing in the superior range in their school on the test, but were not thought to be really talented students in school. And they'd ask the teachers where these students would rank in the school, and very often the teachers would say probably fourth or fifth, and there was no way they could have any kids who were brighter than these youngsters. So they took them through the same regimen of seven courses during the summer, and now we're producing data and evidence to show these kids applying to more selective colleges and being admitted, and they're being very successful academically. We need those kinds of efforts throughout the country, and we think that in order to make the greatest difference, given where historically black colleges are located and the fact that over 57% of African-American population in the country is in the areas of historically black colleges in the South, as a matter of fact. We've seen a migration to the South. 2 decades ago when we did the census, we had 50% of African Americans in the South. Now it's about 58%. So historically black colleges probably have the greatest opportunity to make the biggest difference in closing the achievement gap, and we think that it's going to come through probably a greater investment in schools, but certainly teaching quality will be one aspect of it, and trying to understand what kind of interventions will be the best to conduct. So I'm looking forward to our conversation this evening, and I think this is probably the most important issue that African Americans face in the next 2 decades. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nettles. And we're going to follow in the order that I laid out. I think Dr. Dillon, do a few first out.